Krishna has explained those who surrender to Him and those who don't surrender to Him. Then He explained that of those who do surrender to Him, who is the best? It is the Jnani who is Ekabhakta, who is in full knowledge of Him, and he is concentrating in his heart only on attaining devotion. He is actually extremely dear to Krishna, and he has no material desires. And because his heart is free from all unselfishness, therefore, that clean heart like a mirror, Sheto Dorpana Marujanam, Baba Amahadavagni Navarpanam Shreya Karayava Chandrika Vataranam Vidyavaru Jivanam. His clean heart reflects the mercy of a pure devotee that he will come in contact with, and he very quickly actually will make advancement when he comes in contact. Because his heart is so clean, he has no material desires. He is not filled with what he wants. He is filled with the desire to have devotion. Therefore, he gets the mercy of Krishna. So after explaining that, how four kinds of sukhatinas or pious souls surrender to him, Krishna then explains two kinds of people who surrender, but not to him. They surrender anyway, but they don't surrender to him, and Krishna describes their position. So in text 20, as we read, he describes the ritajan, the one who is deprived of knowledge. His intelligence is stolen by material desires, and therefore he surrenders to demigods and follows the rules and regulations of their worship according to his own nature. So why are these people less intelligent? It's because they are, this is going to be explained in the succeeding verses, but they're following rules and regulations. They're surrendering, but they're not surrendering to Krishna. And who is the one who is giving them, empowering them, allowing them to even do that service to the demigods? That's explained in the next verse. I am in everyone's heart as the super soul. As soon as one desires to worship some demigod, I make his faith steady so that he can devote himself to that particular deity. So Krishna, in the heart, he gives that person who desires fruit of results, he gives them the ability to focus his mind on the demigods and perform all the austerities and all the rules and regulations to get the favor of the demigods, to get their material rewards. Endowed with such a faith, he endeavors to worship a particular demigod and obtains his desires. But in actuality, these benefits are bestowed by me alone, because Krishna is actually the source of the power and the opulence of the demigods. And what they get, what they have to bestow, they're actually getting the potency to make those benedictions. They're getting that potency from Krishna. So now, text 23, the last verse describing the first of these who surrender but not into Krishna. Antavattu palam te sham tadbhavat yalpa medasham devan devo yujo yanti madbhakti yanti mamapi. Men of small intelligence, the word is alpa medasa. Alpa means small, alpa alpa, little little. They have alpa medasa, they have small intelligence, and therefore they worship the demigods. And their fruits, the fruits of their work are limited. And the fruits of their labor and the results of their worship are temporary. Those who worship the demigods go to the planets of the demigods, but my devotees ultimately reach my supreme abode. So someone can say that this is not fair. The worshippers of the demigods, they are following rules and regulations to get material rewards, and the worshippers of Krishna, Artha Jigyasa, Artha Tati, the Artha Tati, they have their material desires, and they are worshipping Krishna and following some rules and regulations, and they're getting their material rewards. They're working very hard. They have faith. Actually, in both cases, the results are being supplied by Krishna. Krishna is giving the fruit of their worship to the demigod worshippers. He's giving the faith to the demigod worshippers. He gives the fruit of the work to the devotees. He gives the faith to the devotees. So why is it that those, they only get limited and temporary fruits? And what are those limited and temporary fruits that the demigod worshippers get? They get some material reward which is destroyed in time, or they even go to the planets of the demigods and enjoy heavenly happiness there. But that is destroyed in time. They go up, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Puna Avatuna Arjuna, and they must come down again. Up and down, up and down. They are moving like that. So why do the devotees reach the supreme abode, which will be described actually in the 8th chapter, in the next chapter? They don't get temporary and limited rewards, they get eternal and unlimited rewards. And they're doing basically the same thing with similar desires to the demigods. So the question could be asked, isn't this injustice? Isn't Krishna being unfair that he's rewarding the devotees differently than he's rewarding the demigods when they're acting more or less on the same level? And the answer, as we can imagine, is no. It is not unfair at all. Rather, it is the rule that according to what one worships, one will get that thing. If one worships the demigods, it is not injustice that they go to the demigods, but that is the rule. They should go to the demigods because they're worshipping the demigods. And if someone worships Krishna, even though his desire in the beginning is not yet pure, it is the rule. Because he's worshipping Krishna, he'll go to Krishna. So it is not at all injustice. It is fair. And is exactly following the rules of nature, that accordingly, according to what one worships, one will get that reward. So the demigods, therefore, because they are doing the same thing as the devotees, but the devotees get the eternal reward of going, attaining the eternal abode of Krishna, where they enjoy eternal happiness with Krishna, where there is no destruction, there is no death, there is no misery, there is no flies buzzing around and bothering me. There's none of the things that give us trouble in the material world. The devotees will ultimately get that, and the demigod worships don't get that at all. And they're doing the same thing, and it's fair. And therefore the demigod worshippers are called Alpamedasa. They have little intelligence, because look how foolish they are. For the same type of worship, they could attain the lotus feet of Krishna, and they don't want that. So therefore they are Alpamedasa. They have very little intelligence. But it is not, as we said, that someone can't worship the demigods. Like Bharat Maharaj is a good example of that. When Bharat Maharaj was the king, he would perform all the Vedic sacrifices, and he would even be worshipping the demigods. But the result for him, for Bharat Maharaj, was not material benefit, it was transcendental ecstasy. And why did he become transcendentally ecstatic? Because he was perceiving the demigods not as individual entities who were very powerful, who could award him with health, a prosperous kingdom, and a full treasury, and good crops for the citizens. He wasn't looking at the demigods as those who could award those material temporary benefits, but rather he was looking at the demigods as just the limbs or the way that Krishna works throughout the universe. He was seeing them as parts of Krishna's universal form. So therefore he was worshipping them as Krishna, as representing Krishna. Not trying to go around Krishna, worshipping them independently. So he was not actually worshipping the demigods while he was worshipping the demigods. He was worshipping Krishna, and therefore the result of his worship was ecstatic, transcendental ecstasy. So these verses explain the position of the demigod worshipper. It will be explained similarly in chapter 9. Now the second type, who doesn't surrender to Krishna but surrenders, is the impersonalist. So that is described in the next few verses. Avyaktam vyaktim apanam manyate mam abhudaya param bhavam ajananto mama vyayam anuttamam. Unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, was impersonal before and have now assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. So these impersonalists, what is their view? That the highest truth is Brahman, the impersonal, the formless, the attributeless, the qualityless. And this Brahman, when it comes to the material world, it contacts the mode of goodness and becomes Ishwara. And therefore, it accepts the form of the mode of goodness. And that form you know as Krishna or Ram, or so many of the different avatars. This is the philosophy of the impersonalist. So they're saying that Krishna has assumed this form and personality. Angani yasya sakalendriya vritti manti. Lord Brahma himself disagrees with this philosophy, and Krishna also disagrees with this philosophy. He's calling these people who think that Krishna has assumed this form and personality. The Brahma Samhita explains that Krishna is his form and personality. He does not assume a form, he is the form. We assume a form. We are different from our form. We are different from our name. We are different from our qualities. We are different from anything that can be said about us. We are souls, eternal. While all these characteristics of us, our temporary identity, or temporary, we will leave them. We are different from them. But Krishna and his name are non-different. Therefore, when we chant Krishna, 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 if our heart is pure, Krishna is actually there in that name, dancing. Krishna is his form. So therefore, the form of the picture of Krishna is Krishna. The form of the deity is Krishna. The form of the deity in our mind is Krishna. If we just contemplate the beautiful form of Radha and Shyama Sunda, Krishna, Balaram, Gonataya, in our mind even, Krishna is there. In that beautiful form, in that opulent form, in that sweet form. So Krishna has not assumed this form, but yet the impersonalists, the Mayavadis, they are thinking that he has assumed this form. And as the demigod worshippers have been described as Alpamedasa, or have small intelligence, worse than them is the Mayavadis, or impersonalists. They are called Abhudaya, which can be translated as they have no intelligence. They are worse than having Alpamedasa, they are Abhudaya. They have nothing, nothing between their ears. Because Actually, it is worse than nothing. They are offenders. Krishna will explain in the ninth chapter about these people, mogasya moga karmano moga jnana vachetasa asurim rakshashim chayava. In this way, Krishna explains that these people, although they want to become liberated, but they, mogasya, asya means hope, it is destroyed. Moga jnana, all their desire for knowledge is destroyed. Everything is destroyed for them. They get nothing because asurim rakshashim chayava, that they have the mood of an asura or a rakshasa, because they do not accept Krishna's form as eternal. They think it is something that Krishna has assumed, that there's a difference between Krishna and his form. Krishna is Brahman, but he is Parabrahman. Krishna is Brahman, Parabrahman. That means that the actual form of Krishna is composed of eternity, bliss, and knowledge. It is unlimited, although to our vision it may appear limited. And that's one of the arguments of the impersonalists. They say that how is it possible, because Brahman is unlimited, how could you limit Brahman by saying he has a form? Because if there is a form, it means it has a beginning and an end. It is 5'9" tall. It weighs so many pounds or so many kilos. If it is over here, if the form is sitting over here, it means it is not sitting over there. So that means it is limited. This is their logic. So therefore, to give Krishna, say that he has a form, means to limit him. But the Vaishnavas say, rascals, if you say that Krishna cannot have an unlimited form, that limits him. You're using your material logic on Krishna. How, if you say that he cannot have an unlimited form, how is that? Who will, if he wants to have an unlimited form, who will stop him? You'll say, no, Krishna, you're not allowed to have an unlimited form. You have to have a limited form. And even Narada Muni, he was amazed when he caught a glimpse of how Krishna's form was unlimited, because he went to the wedding of Krishna and he saw that Krishna married 16,000 wives at the same time, 16,100 wives at the same time. So someone could say, anyone could marry 16,100 wives. All you have to do is marry one, okay, then move that one out of the way, then marry the next one, then move the next one, and then just keep like that. It may take you some time, but you can marry 16,000. But Krishna married them all at the same time. So someone can say, well, that's all right. He can marry them all at the same time. It just fills a big room with 16,108 wives. And then at the same time, he says, I now pronounce you man and wives. And then they marry 16,108 wives at the same time. But Krishna married 16,108 wives at the same time in different places. And he was present in each one of the different places, marrying each one of them, assuming the same Krishna. The same Krishna was present in all those different places. This is wonderful. This is achintya rupa. He has an unlimited, inconceivable form. Only Krishna can do this. And as it is said, when Narada visits all the palaces, it is said that when he went to one palace, Krishna was playing with a child, and another palace he was playing chess, and another palace he was doing this, and another palace he was doing that. And it explains that Narada Muni, he knew the art of expanding himself into eight or so forms. That takes great spiritual potency. But each of those forms would have to be doing the same thing. But Krishna, 16,100 forms, are each doing different things, the same Krishna. And that is nothing for Krishna to do that. Nothing. That is not even showing off his incredible potencies. So when the impersonalists say that Krishna has assumed this form, because to say that he has a form would limit him, this is a great offense. And therefore they're asuras and rakshasas, and they are called abhudaya. They have no intelligence. So this hints at why this ajopisam avyayatma bhutanam ishvaropisam in 4-6, that Krishna's form is unborn, eternal. It has so many incredible ever-existing qualities. His body never deteriorates. So how could it be composed of the material mode of goodness, sattva-gun? It never deteriorates. Ajopisam avyayatma bhutanam ishvaropisam. Sambhavami yatma maya. He doesn't appear by the mode of goodness, by taking on a form of the mode of goodness, which is in the, this is in the realm of Mahamaya, but rather he appears by his Atmamaya, his own internal energy. And when Krishna appears in this material world, he is not actually in the material world at all. He is actually in the spiritual world, and he's just allowing us to take a glimpse of him, although with our material eyes we should not be able to. That is what it means. He is never in the material world. He is always existing in his sandini potency, his internal energy. So these people think that Krishna was impersonal before and has now assumed this personality. Now why? Now what would the impersonalists say? Why would he assume a personality? To enjoy. You mean he's not satisfied as Brahman? No, what would the impersonalist say? He assumes a personality. Why?
Because he has to.
He has to?
To come into the material world.
Why does he want to come into the material world?
Beyond me.
It's beyond. That's what they must probably. Yeah. He wants to please his devotees, but he has no qualities. But he has no qualities. How could something without qualities have the quality of wanting to please his devotees? That would be means he has a quality and he's no longer qualityless.
No.
No. Oh, he, yes.
This is the Brahman response itself, the response to the demands of the living entities.
You mean there's the Brahman and the living entities? There's two.
No. It's the same part of the Brahman. But
yeah.
The Brahman is conditioned by by Durga.
By Durga, so there's two, Brahman and Durga. So it's not absolute
many,
anymore.
There are many now.
Yeah. So there's not only two, there's many. It's not Brahman anymore.
But it takes a different form.
If it takes a different form, as soon as there's a form, then it's not talking about Brahman anymore. Because Brahman is formless.
You just haven't realized it.
Huh?
You just haven't realized it.
Obviously. Well, what haven't I realized yet? I mean, I haven't realized it. That means there's me and it. That's two already. So Brahman is not absolute. Huh?
You haven't realized that you're one with that form yet.
But I'm two now. So how could there be two?
But actually you aren't. You just think you are.
But, okay, so there's me and my thinking. There's two already.
But this doesn't exist because there's only
two. Okay, then there's existence and non-existence. There's two again. So then there's non-absolute. So I'm part. There's a part in the whole. That's two. Brahman means non-dual. So how can there be a part of something that there's only one of? As soon as there's a part, that means there's two. The whole and the part. Oh, simultaneous, that means it's simultaneously one and it's simultaneously different. That's duality.
No, but at the same time, but at one time.
This is the tack they take and talk nonsense. Because they talk word juggling, they say, oh, this is very deep. I cannot understand it. It must be very deep. So they think that Krishna was impersonal before and have assumed this person, now assumed this personality. Due to their small knowledge, they do not know Krishna's higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. They don't know that Krishna himself is the supreme and imperishable. Therefore, this is because they have no knowledge, actually. They have no knowledge of Buddhaya. Now, why can't they understand? Why? That is explained in the next verse. Naham prakasya savasya yoga maya samavrita mudo yam nava jananti. Mudo means because they are, Prabhupada politely translates it as foolish. Sometimes we say donkeys or less intelligent. But they can't, both these people can't know Krishna. Both the demigod worshippers and the impersonalists, na jananti, they cannot understand Krishna and his true position. And what is his true position? Lokomam ajam avayam, that he is unborn. They think that if someone is Brahman and then takes on a form, it is more or less just what like what happens to the living entity. Right? He's a soul, Brahman, and he takes on a form. But Krishna is saying that he is ajam. He is unborn. He is not taking on a form. That's what we call birth, the taking on a form. But Krishna, for Krishna, there is no birth. He takes on no form. And he is avyayam. He is inexhaustible. So naham prakasha sarvasha. Why can't people know this? Because yoga maya samavrita. Because they cannot understand this, because they are covered by yoga maya. And in the material world, that means mahamaya. They are in maya. Prabhu, you are in maya. So this is why I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. Both the people who simply worship the demigods, they cannot understand Krishna's position. And the impersonalists, they cannot understand Krishna's position because they are covered. It is not that Krishna is covered. Just like when we, in the rainy season, we look up at the sky and we think that the sun is covered. But actually the sun is not covered. It is our eyes that is covered, and we can't see the sun. Our eyes are covered. When we go up in the airplane, immediately after a few thousand feet, we go above the cloud level, and the sun is there, completely uncovered. And for hundreds and hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles, the sun is uncovered. It's our eyes that are covered by Maya. So the sun, just as the sun cannot be covered by a cloud, Krishna can never be covered by Maya. Brahman, Parabrahma, can never be covered by any kind of Maya. So, this is the situation. Krishna is existing eternally with his parishads, his dham, his associates, and his abode, and his paraphernalia. Existing eternally. And we cannot see Krishna because we are covered by Maya. Now, does that mean, just like if we had an example, there's Radha Manohar over there. So if we put up a curtain, we don't have to put up a curtain, we just put up a janu. Now, I cannot see Radha Manohar right now. And that means that he cannot see me, right? So, because we cannot see Krishna, because we are covered by Maya, does that mean that Krishna cannot see us in the same way? And the answer is no, of course. And that's explained in the next verse. O Arjuna, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I know everything that has happened in the past, all that is happening in the present, and all things that are yet to come. I also know all living entities, but me no one knows. So the covering of Maya is one way only, that we cannot see Krishna, but it cannot in any way inhibit Krishna from seeing or Krishna from knowing. The clouds can never cover the sun, and similarly, Maya can never, ever inhibit Krishna. Can never stop Krishna from knowing. He knows past, he knows present, he knows the future, he knows all living entities. Savasya chaham riddhi sanavisto matta smritim jnanam apohanam cha. He is in everyone's heart, and he knows everything. He knows everything about us. Sometimes we try to cheat Krishna. We try to do things. This was one thing Prabhupada said when he was a young boy going to school. And he was going to a Christian school. So they were arguing against the law of karma. That if there is a law of karma and you do something bad, you will get punished for it. That is the law of karma. Or if you do something good, you'll get rewarded. But in order for that to work, there has to be a witness. So where is the witness, they would argue. So we cannot cheat Krishna, because he is in the heart. He is witnessing everything. Anumanta, Varta, Bhokta, Maheshwara. What is the beginning? Upadrashta Anumanta cha, Varta, Bhokta, Maheshwara. Paramatma ti chapyukto, Dehizmin Purusha Para. There is a Purusha Para, a supreme person in our heart, and he is the Anumanta, he is the witness. What chapter is that from? Very good. Chapter 13. So he is the witness, so there is nowhere we can go to commit improper activities where Krishna will not witness it. And there is nowhere we can go when we do something good, that Krishna will not witness that. Sometimes we're in a situation and we have an opportunity to do good to someone, and we turn our back on that opportunity. But we should know that if we do the right thing, Krishna will always see it, and he will appreciate it. That is our sincerity, that we do the right thing and avoid the wrong thing. That is our sincerity. It shows that we want to be servants of Krishna. Even though it is so hard to do the right thing and to avoid the wrong thing. We are conditioned living entities. We have so many desires. But those desires that we have, the ischana dvesha, the desire to enjoy and the desire to avoid suffering, we should know this as the cause of our illusion. It is not the cause of our happiness. This is why we are in the material world, practically speaking. And this is why we remain in the material world. We have so many desires and plans, what we want to do, what we don't want to do, and all those desires are hardened around our false ego, our false identity of who we are. We are the center. We are not the servant of Krishna. It is anything but being the servant of Krishna. And hardened around that are so many desires, and this is why our hearts, or my heart, is so hard, because I have so many plans of how I'm going to do this and that, but I don't consider myself the servant of Krishna. Krishna bhuli se jeev anadi bahi mukh. So how long? This is the curtain of Maya. This is the delusion. And this is what the next verse explains. Ista dvesha samuthena dvanva mohena bharata sarva bhutani sammoham sargayante parantapa. That ista dvesha samuthena dvanva mohena bharata. Mohena means the illusion. Out of the illusion, or the illusion of the living entity, is this dvandva mohena. Dvandva means the duality. And what is the duality? Ista dvesha samutena. It is the duality arising from our desires and our aversions. Ista dvesha. I love this, I hate this. He is good, he is bad. This situation is good, this situation is bad. Eternally, practically speaking, we just revolve on the cycle of samsara, going to one place after another, looking, following this, the ista dvesha. Our desires and our aversions. O scion of Bharata, O conqueror of the foe, all living entities are born into delusion. We are born into this delusion. As soon as we take our birth, we are filled with ista dvesha, what is good and what is bad. And based on those, we build our illusory identity. And we follow that illusory identity to the moment of our death. And then we adopt a new illusory identity, adishtayam manastayam visya upasevate, based on the mind, based on how the mind has developed and the association it has had, and that will somewhat change our ista dvesha, our desires and aversions. And that, we will die, and then we, based on that, we will take on a new material body. So we become bewildered right from the very moment of birth. Since time immemorial, this has been going on. Anadya Bahimukh. So the covering of desires and aversions is so thick. It is unlimitedly thick. Unlimitedly thick. And soon as we satisfy one desire, it springs, it shows its real nature. It's like pulling, just like there's, sometimes you have a sweater or a sock that has one little string pulling. And you pull that one little string and the whole, at least, you know, the whole sock unravels or something, or the whole sweater falls apart, like that. So, similarly, when we pull one little desire, thinking that to gratify it, especially when we do it in a whimsical way, meaning we just do what our mind wants without consulting anyone. Sometimes we don't want anyone to know, so we don't ask anyone. But this shows insincerity. We don't consult, so we pull the string. And so many other desires, unlimited other desires, also follow immediately. We can just keep pulling and pulling, and we just think, only if I pull one more time, if I satisfy this one more desire, it'll be over. And we pull it, and more and more and more and more. And each desire leads to so many other desires. This is our situation. And we don't want to do this. And if we don't want to do that, then we also can't want to do this. And this and this. Unlimitedly just following, pulling and pushing our way through the material world until the moment of our death. And then take another body and go through a similar cycle again and again and again in a different body. Completely bewildered, deluded by this illusory dvandva, this duality. Inauspicious. So we learn, from Srila Prabhupada, that there is nothing auspicious in the material world. We should accept that there is nothing auspicious in the material world. Everything is inauspicious. This is actually the situation. Everything is inauspicious. So what? So I'm going to read the next verse and then. So is it possible? Does anyone ever become a devotee? If this is the situation. So Krishna explains. Yesam. All these verses are so important. Seven chapters, very important. Nandu. Where is Nandu? Acha, what? He's back there. Way back there. By the Yamuna. In the room. You know? Almost? Something. Tikata papam. Jananam punya karmanam. Te dvanva mohinir mukta bhajante mam dridha vrata. So, why do people become devotees, or how do people become devotees? Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of delusion. So, we should understand that this Ichha Dvesha, this Dvandva, these dualities, this is our delusion, and we have to remove the delusion to become free. And how does this happen? From previous lives, purva samskaras, one somehow or another contacts the devotee, acts piously. The piety or the mode of goodness is, or pious activities are considered good. It's like plowing the field, making it fertile. And then, if we are very fortunate, Brahmanda Brahmate Konya Bhagavan Jeev Guru Krishna Prasade Vai Bhakti Lata Bhij, then in that fertile field of our heart, cultivated for many, 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 many lifetimes, then one gets the seed of pure devotional service. And then one becomes free from this Ichha Dvesha, the duality of delusion, or the delusion of duality. And then, when one isn't considering good and bad in terms of something material, then one can engage himself in my service with determination, dridha vrataha, with a strong vow. As long as one, his own self is in the center of his life, he cannot engage himself in devotional service with determination. And that means still impious. So how to remove this impiety and this delusion? The answer has been already explained, and Prabhupada explains it in the purport also. The answer is Vya Vya Satmika Buddhi Ekeha Kurunandana. That one has to become fixed in higher authority on the order of Guru. One has to become fixed in this. And if we adopt and think of Guru as pet and not serious, and we do what he says when we like it and we reject when we don't like it, then we're just being controlled by Ichha Dvesha Samutena Vandva Mohena Bharata. Those eligible for elevation to the transcendental position are mentioned in this verse. For those who are sinful, atheistic, foolish, and deceitful, it is very difficult to transcend the duality of desire and hate. Only those who have passed their lives in practicing the regulative principles of religion, who have acted piously, and have conquered sinful reactions, can accept devotional service and gradually rise to the pure knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then gradually they can meditate in trance on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That is the process of being situated on the spiritual platform. This elevation is possible in Krishna consciousness in the association of pure devotees, for in the association of great devotees, one can be delivered from delusion. It is stated in the Srimad Bhagavatam that if one actually wants to be liberated, He must render service to the devotees. Mahat sevam dwaramahur mamukte. But one who associates with materialistic persons is on the path leading to the darkest region of existence. Tamo dwaram yushitam sanghi sangam. This association is the key. It acts on the heart as a crystal. If we associate with exalted devotees, they will place within our heart the desire, the deep desire to become a servant of Krishna. If we associate with materialists, they will place within our heart the deep desires to enjoy the material world. So all the devotees of the Lord traverse the earth just to recover the conditioned souls from their delusion. It's a nice sentence. Because when one receives the glance of a pure devotee, or a moment's talking with a pure devotee, all sins can be removed just by that. One can remove sins by bathing in the holy rivers like Jamuna and Ganga after long periods of time, but just by receiving the glance of an exalted devotee, being the association of such a devotee, just for a moment, that all sins could be removed, one could become fixed. A devotional service could be established. Okay, now this chapter is winding down with two final verses, which will actually lead to the next verse, the next chapter. The next to last verse describes the fourth kind of Sakam devotee, the Yoga Misra Bhakta, who takes shelter of Krishna to get liberated from birth and death, the wheel of samsara. Intelligent persons who are endeavoring for liberation from old age and death take refuge in me in devotional service. They are actually Brahman because they entirely know everything about these transcendental activities. Pure devotion because they are Misra. Still, they are Misra Bhaktas. They get liberation. And then finally, those in full consciousness of me, who know me, the Supreme Lord, to be the governing principle of the material manifestation of the demigods. So it's not the demigods who are in control, so worship Krishna. And of all methods of sacrifice, he is the governing principle of all sacrifice. So don't worship the demigods, worship Krishna. Can understand and know me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, even at the time of death. So these verses are actually very important, and they will... They're the subject matter of the last two verses of the subject matter of the questions Arjuna asks at the beginning of the eighth chapter. Any questions?
So the last one is the pure devotee, and the next to last one is the...
What last one?
The last verse, is that describing the pure devotee?
This is the qualifications, how one can take up devotional service. Yesham Tvantakata Papam. He has to be free.
But I mean, this 6:30, you said the 6:9. That's 6:20.
29 describes
the Satam
Yoga. Yoga Misra Bhakta, the fourth kind. Chator Vidha Bhajante Mam. So three kinds of Sakam devotees and one Nishkam devotee were described in that verse. The Jnani is the Nishkam devotee. So three kinds of Sakam devotees, and here's the fourth kind of Sakam devotee, Yoga Misra Bhakta, who desires liberation.
And
60. Text 30
sums up.
It's different. It's describing one who is fully conscious of Krishna. And even at the time of death, they can understand and know him because they're fully conscious of him. And if they're remembering Krishna at the time of death, then they will go to Krishna. That will be explained in the next verse. Any other questions? Thank you, Tom.
In the yoga letter, in the Karma Kanda section, the people have religious motives. So I wonder where is this demigod worship fitting in the yoga ladder, is it also part of the yoga ladder? No.
The demigod worshippers?
No.
There is no yoga. They have karma kanda.
It's part of the yoga ladder. It's karma kanda.
It's Krishna's plan to elevate them, but there is no eternal benefit from karma kanda. There is only temporary benefit. Those who worship the demigods, they go to the demigods. Their results are limited and temporary.
In karma kanda, that's actually good, that they, by association they get.
That's the glories. If by doing sacrifices, they get association. Then they'll give that up. They go to the Jnana Kanda section. I just wanted to read other thing. One thing. See if I can find it. That if one has to be free from attraction and repulsion, istha-dvesha, and everything in the material world is inauspicious, a devotee sees it. Well, how does a devotee actually view the material world? So the story of Sudama Brahmana is very important in this regard, because Sudama Brahmana was living in a very poor fashion, and one could say, and there was the degree of willingness to do that, and one could say that he was averse to the material world. So when Sudama Brahmana went to see Krishna, he didn't end up asking Krishna for anything, but Krishna benedicted him with giving him so many material things. So while Sudama Brahmana was walking back to his house, he was wondering why Krishna gave him so many things. Let me see if I can find it. Here. There's a few points in this. Sudama thought, as explained by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura, is the purport. The humble Brahmana Sudama considered himself unworthy of the Supreme Lord's most rare and valuable benediction, pure devotional service. He reasoned that if he had any true devotion, the Lord would have granted him perfect unflinching devotion rather than the material riches and servants he had received. Lord Krishna would have protected a more serious devotee by denying him such distractions. The Lord will give a sincere but less intelligent devotee not as much material wealth as he desires, but only what will promote his devotional service. Sudama thought, a great saint like Prahlad can avoid being contaminated by immeasurable wealth, power, and fame, but I must always be wary of temptation in my new situation. Sudama's earthly fortune has been described, and now Sukadev Goswami describes the treasure the Brahmin enjoyed in the next world. Srila Jiva Goswami that mentions that Sudama's last trace of illusion lay in the subtle pride of being a renounced Brahmana. This trace was also destroyed by his contemplating the Supreme Lord's submission to his devotees. I can't find it exactly, but it explains that Sudama had an aversion to the material world, and a devotee has to be neutral to the material world, thinking that everything is Krishna's energy, nirvanda Krishna sambandha yukta varagya. So therefore, to cure him of that aversion, he presented him with so many material things to be used in Krishna's service. And therefore, Sudama accepted him very carefully, but hesitatingly, because, as he said, that great devotees like Prahlad can deal with the material energy, be a king, and not be contaminated. But I am not so exalted, so I have to be very careful when dealing with the material energy. So we should take that very much to heart. We should not be overly proud of being renounced, nor should we be attached. Better to be neutral in regard to the material world and carefully use everything in Krishna's service. Okay, so the test.